Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Bigfoot and Company. This is Dr. John. So glad to be with everyone today. Wild and crazy week of Bigfoot activity all over the world, and we've got a great and exciting guest. First of all, I wanted to say hello to my buddy and chief Bigfoot explorer on my team, Matt Delf. How are you, Matt?
Doing pretty good today.
You're pretty good? Well, that's great. I know you had a great time there this weekend. You can tell us a little bit about it later up there with Matt Delf and the whole crowd. And we're just glad to have you here with us. We're leading up, of course, to the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, April the 26th, 27th, and 28th in Rabun County / Clayton, Georgia. It's going to be a good one. It's going to be a lot of fun. So anyway, we are glad to have you with us. In fact, we got another buddy of ours. We got a guy that helps produce the network that we're one of the networks that we're on. We got Joel Walling. Joel, how are you doing today? Are you with us, Joel? Oh, I know he's there somewhere. We'll catch him a little bit later. That's okay. All right. Today, our guest is none other than Robin Haynes McCray. Robin, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
We're so glad. You're welcome. I want to tell everybody the crazy story. I like crazy stories, don't you, Robin?
Yeah, my life is basically made up of crazy stories.
Yeah, in fact, it's really funny. Where I have my business here in Myrtle Beach, there's a sign in the business next door that says, "You don't have to be crazy to work here. We'll teach you." So I think that's the new mantra for Bigfoot and Company. You don't have to be crazy. We'll teach you. But anyway, thanks so much. Here's what happens. You know, when you run a Bigfoot conference like the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, it goes crazy. So many people are contacting me about speaking gigs. So I got this nice, polite messenger message from you that said, "I wanted to see if you would be interested in having Igor Burtsev." Now, he is the great Bigfoot researcher and scientist from Moscow, Russia, at your conference. And I looked at that, so I clicked off on it. I said, "Well, nobody's going to be contacting me to have Igor over here." So about 5 minutes later, I went back, and sure enough, the message was there. So I said, "Okay, I'll bite." So I started talking with you, Robin, and you were very, very nice, and it seemed like you had your own share of Bigfoot stories. So I said, "Well, let's chat." It was late. We're both night owls. So I said, "Can I give you a call?" And you said yes. And boom, here we are, because we had such a good time talking. I said, "You know, I got to get this lady here on Bigfoot and Company." So I'm glad you're here with us. And so tell us a little bit about yourself. And I think that's a good way for us to get started.
They've always been around me. I don't remember a time that they weren't. Even as a child, I would ride my bike to the end of our subdivision road, which backed up into woods, and they would literally come within the tree line, and I would sit down there playing in the sand with whatever, riding my little bike around, and they were there. And they just, everywhere I've ever been, they've shown up. It's just been part of my normal life. My kids grew up around them. They were always there for the kids as well.
So I'm going to get this story straight. You're saying that Bigfoot has integrated itself into your life.
Yeah, for lack of a better way to put it, yeah. It was nothing I started to look for them or I planned this. They found me. I never went out of my way to find them. They would just show up. And the first couple times I thought it was a fluke, and then it just happened to be wherever I was at. You know, given enough time, it just, that's the way it works out. They tend to choose people.
Uh-huh.
I mean, people decide that they're going to go out and find them, and good luck to you. A lot of people do, but they pick who they want to be around.
Once they like you, you can't
get rid of them if you wanted to.
Oh, wow.
I know the feeling. It's kind of like, and I don't mind sharing this with everyone on Bigfoot and Company. It's like my mother. Doesn't matter where I move, she finds me. She passed away 26 years ago, and she was a wonderful lady, and She always seems to know where I go, and she lets me know wherever I live by the knocking and banging around and the weird things
exactly.
that happen. I just and so I know she's here with me, and it makes me feel really good. We so
yeah,
that's kind
and,
of
and
the way
I'm
my
blessed
paranormal.
To have them around.
So, what was your first? What was the first? Very first experience that you remember. That's always the thing that I like to try to capture is the first experience because that tells us a lot about everything, you know?
Well, I was literally like 4 or 5 and I would go down by the woods because I was always drawn to the woods. And back then it was safe to let your kids go and explore. And we lived right near it. And it was just like at the end of the block. And I would watch them walk between the trees or, you know, like I said, if I was sitting down there, they would be moving around. And I just don't remember not having them there. As I got older, it got more intense. You know, more intricate situations would happen where, you know, I would see them more, there would be more contact or it was more in depth. But, I mean, even as a child, my mom used to tell me that, you know, when I was 2 years old, I would talk about my imaginary friends that were taller than my dad and covered in hair. So, you know,
you know, it's interesting. Every kid has an invisible friend. I don't know a kid that doesn't. Now, there's Welsh mythology. There's Harvey the Pooka, which was popularized in a film in the 40s starring Jimmy Stewart. And everybody said, oh, that's wonderful. It's funny. We're done with it. But I don't know many kids growing up that don't have an invisible friend. Matt, I've never asked you this. Did you have an invisible friend when you were growing up?
I had an invisible family, so I had the whole group.
See, I never asked you that question. That's what I like to do on a podcast. I like to just go ahead and ask the big question and see what the answer is because I think that's most important. Yeah, I had some invisible friends. In fact, I thought that I saw them. They were actually quite short, and they were silver, and they were about 3 feet tall, but that's another story for another day. Matt, we'll have to have Angelia on here for that story. But so let me ask you, if you had to guess, when you were a little kid, were there a lot of them? And if you think the word a lot adequately describes it, how many of them were out there in the woods with you? I mean, I would guess that you probably didn't hang out in more than maybe an acre or so of woods if you were a little kid. You know, what would you say about the number of them that were out there, Robin?
Well, when I was little, you know, I mean, when I went down there, and by that time they weren't in my imagination. They were in flesh and blood. And there was always two or three of them that would be there. I mean, occasionally I would walk down there and there would be one, but normally, you know, I would see one or two. I think a few times maybe there was three of them. This woods, actually, we lived in a subdivision, and the woods it was next to the subdivision. So it went quite deep back there, and I was a small child, so I didn't go deep into the woods. Was when they built the subdivision, they had all this leftover dirt and they just dumped it all down there, and the kids had turned it into like 3 or 4 mounds that you could ride your bike up and down. And I would go down there, and I was, like I said, I was drawn to the woods. When I went into it, I wasn't way deep in it. I just was right in the, you know, in the first part of it. And I would go out there and I'd sit and I'd listen. And I've always been an avid animal lover, so for me to go out and sit in the woods and just watch nature and everything going around was very normal for me. You know, and I would see them walking in between trees and they'd peek out and occasionally one would come a little bit forward. But I mean, it wasn't like it was overwhelming and, you know, a bunch of them just rushed up towards me. It was anywhere between 1, 2, occasionally a third one. But then that would transpire to, even though I was in a subdivision, I can vividly remember as a small child being up at night and looking out the window and seeing a face looking back in. You know, I've never known where even people that I speak with on a regular basis, whether it's city, a subdivision, or in the woods, if they're going to find you, they find you. It's not just restricted if you're, you know, in the woods. Now, I've always been a person that wanted to live in the woods. And so, I mean, it would make it easier access to myself because I don't do cities. I'm fine to go in and shop, but I don't like living in cities.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I know that in the UFO community, people describe the fact that they are approached all the time by aliens. I know that people that describe the world as a paranormal place are approached frequently by ghosts. And
exactly.
I know it kind of sounds crazy, but I think it's a point that is well worth taking. And so, Matt, I knew you would love this. So, what do you think? Join the discussion here. Have you ever talked to people that seem to have the Bigfoot experience drawn to them?
Oh yeah, I've talked to lots of people. That's what I was getting ready to say. I know nothing of our guest, and so I'm going to kind of pick here a little bit and see. So, where exactly were you at? Like, grew up at? Had these experiences? Or what type of? Are you a very sensitive person? Like, excuse me. Were you a type that that can like, I don't know, kind of like a psychic in a way, maybe?
I think so. I mean, I've always been very sensitive. I pick up spirits really easy. Again, these aren't things that I go and look for. These are situations that just happen in my life. It's never been anything, that I really went out on a limb and said, oh, I want to connect with the spirit or the Bigfoots or anything like that. It's just these are experiences that happen to me naturally. It's just part of who I am. I grew up in Michigan. And up until a year ago, I've always lived in Michigan. And I now am living in South Carolina. It has not slowed down any of the experiences at all. It doesn't, when I was in Michigan, I lived in 3 or 4 places. And I had, my experiences just continued. It didn't seem to slow down based on my location at all.
So are you... any other type of, can you like energy, can you feel energy off others? And
Yeah.
Okay.
When I was little and that started, I kind of like tried to brush it off. And I would talk to people and say, I pick up this or I pick up that. And people would say, well, how did you know this? And, it's me. It doesn't mean I'm, perfect at it 100%. Or anything else, it's just part of who I am.
That's interesting. Okay, another question here. What type of blood? Are you a positive or a negative blood type?
I'm O positive. I'm O positive. And I've heard that the Rh negative as well as the O negative and positive, for some reason that seems to draw that. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. That's just what I'd heard.
See, myself, I'm an Rh negative, and my mom is, and my found out my daughter was, and my daughter's real sensitive. She can feel all kinds of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
That's been brought to my attention that people like ourselves that have that Rh negative factor can feel things off.
Yeah,
it's kind of weird, but there's also like we're talking, how
I call my friends and. And they are always like, well, how did you know this is going on with me? And it's just, I get a feeling. And
right.
Not all the time, but more often than not, it's pretty accurate.
The sixth sense that kicks in. You can feel it. You know it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, see, I've known a lot of people that's had encounters or sightings like that, that it's the energy that you produce and what they produce, it just like... a magnetic force that draws everything to you.
Yeah.
So now, are these animals? Have you heard any of them? Like the mind speak that people talk about, or anything like that, or like flesh and blood completely?
No, they've mind spoke with me since I was probably, I want to say it wasn't long after I started seeing them. That's continued through the years. I did go through a period because when I would try to tell anybody that, nobody would believe me. And I would think to myself, you know, I'm not crazy. I'm not crazy in any other aspect of my life, but these things are happening. And it finally turned it around because they would tell me things and I would mention them to somebody else and they would say, well, how did you know that? Or I would say, you know, last night when you did this, this, and this, and how did you know that? Well, they told me. And it got to be harder, you know, to just try to logically say it wasn't happening. And I decided when I was a teenager that, you know, why sit there and say it's not real when everything about it is? And so I just decided to go with it.
That it's kind of interesting because I was in North Georgia this weekend and was at the Expedition Bigfoot, big museum there, and we had all kinds of Bigfoot people there and kind of had a discussion there. A good friend of mine, Angelina, we were discussing, we were thinking, you know, a lot of people think, well, Bigfoot's aliens and stuff like that, but we got to thinking, you know, maybe they were the residents here, and maybe humans are the alien species to Earth. What is your take on any of that? Do you think?
Well, I know a lot of people aren't going to believe me, and I'm okay with that. I made my peace with that a long time ago. But I did ask them one time what they were. I mean, this was before I really came out, and there was a lot of people that even knew I had them around me. And at the time I asked them, I had an entire clan. I was living in Michigan, and they were a very constant. They would freely walk around the yard. I mean, I was feeding them at night, which I don't recommend to everybody, but I was. And I flat out said, what are you? And the one that I asked it to, through MindSpeak, pointed to the sky, and they said, we're human just like you. And then they pointed up to the sky. They said, we're human like you. We're just not 100% human. And they pointed upward. And then, as we all know, when Dr. Melba Ketchum did the DNA, there is a part of them that came back unknown. They never said what the unknown was. They just said it was a human hybrid. So, I mean, but that, I went straight to the source and asked them, you know. And I think when you get in them deep enough where you've moved past the flesh and blood aspect of them, if you truly want to know everything there is about them, you have to come to that moment where you say, okay, I may not agree with it, I may not want to accept it, but they do have paranormal abilities. And when it gets to that point, then you have to really start, you know, saying to yourself, this may not be something I'm comfortable believing in, but most of, and not all, but most of the people that you talk to that do have a lot of interaction, a lot of good interaction with them, will tell you that they do have these paranormal abilities, and they have to get them somewhere. So I think it's definitely something to be open to. I mean, you either want the truth or you don't want the truth. So I guess my looking at it is I want the truth. Good, bad, or indifferent, if that's what's part of them, then I also want to know about that.
Exactly. That's like you probably noticed a lot of the, what I call the Bigfoot community, it's either flesh and blood or it's the paranormal side of it, the woo as they call it, and a lot of the clash a lot. Myself, I tend to take a specific approach first and, you know, it's flesh and blood, but I keep an open mind. Where I've come and 20 years of research, I've come across stuff now that, you know, I love hearing stories about this. I want to hear the other side, too, because there's more to it than what we're...
Exactly.
And
well, in a perfect example, I was out in my yard one day, and I knew they were out there. They had, you know, been making all the noises and vocalizations and the tree knocks and stomping and all that. And I had a female that was off to my left side, standing in the tree line, and I had seen her out there, just a glimpse of her, and then she went off. But on my right side, about 10 feet from me, was a white male. And I was very used to him. When I would go out in the woods, I went out every day. And I had the same path so that they knew where I was going to be at all times. I mean, it wasn't, you know, where they didn't know what I was going to do. It was very predictable with them. And I made the same loop through the property every day. And he would follow me. I used to call him Shadow because he was like my shadow. And he was roughly 6 to 7 foot tall. He was built very much like a regular man, not quite as big built as some of the other ones, but he was young at the time. And anyway, I looked to my right. He was standing there. I saw every square inch of him. He was 100% flesh and blood. And he stood there, and he looked at me as I was looking at him, and then he simply vanished. And, you know, I guess I say to the people that are having a hard time with the whole cloaking thing is I understand 100% why you would be hesitant to believe it. However, once you physically see it with your own eyes, it really does change your way of thinking. And he did. He didn't take off. He didn't go anywhere. He was standing there in flesh and blood 1 second, and then he simply vanished. And this was 10 feet from me. And he was standing right in front of the trees. I mean, it would have been very easily seen had he ran back through the brush because it was a very thick wooded area that he was standing in. And he was close enough to me where I would have obviously seen it.
So, yeah, you brought up a good point there. It's like the whole Bigfoot thing in general. You know, I was brought up, Bigfoot exists. It was out in the Himalaya Mountains or somewhere out in the Pacific Northwest, and they speak the folk or stuff like that, and actually had my encounter, and then seeing is believing, of course, and same way with all this that you've experienced. You know, if you've experienced it, you don't care if anybody believes it or not. You know what happened, what you've seen.
Exactly. Everybody says, "Well, seeing is believing." It's not. Believing is seeing. Once you believe, you would be amazed at what actually opens up that you're missing. We miss so much because we're taught things are a certain way.
Exactly.
When you open up your mind, you look at things differently and you actually get much more.
You know, I want to interrupt you with an experience that I had today, and it absolutely stunned me, and I didn't know what to say. I have my caricature business down there on Broadway. I'm sorry, at the boardwalk in Myrtle Beach, and I was standing in the Gay Dolphin right next door to the Gay Gift Cove, which is the largest gift shop on the East Coast. And there's a gentleman that is on the first floor. He has a business where he creates these little crystal models with people's picture embedded in them. It's a really nice little business. He's been there for 2 years. And I was standing there waiting for the owner to come out. I had a question to ask him. And I was like a foot from the wall. And all of a sudden, this gentleman who has this little crystal business downstairs, he walked in front of me from the wrong side. I was 1 foot from the wall. And this guy walked in front of me from the left. I was stunned. He made a mistake. He kind of showed me that he's not exactly who we think he is. I was really surprised. And, you know, when you have an experience like this, you check it over in your head. I want to ask both of you. You check it over in your head many, many times, but then all of a sudden you say, well, that's what I saw. I know for a fact he came past me from the left, and there was no room for him to walk by. I was no more than a foot from the wall. How could that have happened? And I think many times we miss these experiences because we just don't notice, we're not looking, or we think, well, that couldn't happen. It must have been the other way. But I know the deep, you know, Robin, do you feel that might be the case? Is sometimes we're just afraid to believe what our senses tell us?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, we've been told for so long that things are a certain way, so that anything out of the norm, we either miss, refuse to accept, or we don't acknowledge it in any way.
or don't want to acknowledge.
And we don't want to. We're like, no, because we're taught that's not how it works. And I think especially once you get into this field of research with the Bigfoot or any other cryptids or anything paranormal, you have to expand your mind to the possibilities because, like it or not, we don't know it all. We're never going to know it all. And there are things out there that we have no concept of because we live our lives in either a black and white situation. All of these other things are all in the gray area. And that seems to be really hard for a lot of people to accept is that there is the gray area. And I think that we block our senses to it. We block our vision to it. I can't imagine anybody that hasn't saw something with their own eyes at some point in time in their life and just totally discarded it because it wasn't the norm. It wasn't what we were taught to believe was really there. And I think that has a lot to do with it, you know. You have to, once you're open to it, and I talk to a lot of people, a lot of witnesses that say the same thing. Once you open your mind and even acknowledge one situation, it's like opening a floodgate. And you start seeing more. And in my case, because this is just, I don't know any other way, because it's been like this since I was a kid. And I come from a family that truly, really didn't believe in this type of thing. They did believe in spirits. My mother was always able to talk to ghosts. Even as a child, it's been something that's, you know, gone through my life. Heaven knows, even when I was little, my children have to experience it as well. But, you know, I didn't come from a family that was all about Bigfoots. I mean, I was 4 years old and I was telling my mom about stick structures and the Bigfoots and the ETs. Now, back then, that was not anything that was public knowledge. Patterson-Gimlin film wasn't out yet. To acknowledge Bigfoot, they didn't have books out there. They didn't have anybody that would even consider talking about this. But yet I'm a four-year-old child, and I'm telling my parents and my grandparents and anybody that would listen. And they all thought it was cute and funny. And, oh, look, she's just a little kid talking, you know. It's all in her mind. Well, it's not all in my mind because it's still there. Only now I live it.
That's a good point.
That's why they always say kids pick it up quicker than the adults. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I'm sorry. Like you were talking about, our minds are wired a certain way. And then it's like with the whole Bigfoot thing with me, I had all the signs around me that I didn't pick them up because Bigfoot didn't exist in my mind. It was just folklore.
Exactly.
Like that. And then as I went through, because I used to do a lot of hunting in the woods, and when I had my encounter, I looked back, and all the stuff that was there that was pointing, I didn't recognize because my mind was wired totally different. But now that I know that they exist, I know for a fact because I've seen it, I look at it differently. It changes your mind. It opens it up. You know, if that's out there, then it just opens your mind completely.
It does. And I think as we talk to other people, it does as well. I have many pigs, and I had to. I had no intention of a third. And somebody that I knew had a litter. And in the middle of the night, I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden I had this mad desire to get another mini pig. And I thought, this is crazy because I didn't want another one. But I decided all of a sudden now I have to have this mini pig. So I contact my friend, and I'm like, yes, I want one out of your litter, please. We go out so I can, you know, see him. She had a little male left, and we drove out there. And I didn't know this woman very well. I had only known her, you know, as far as speaking to her through Facebook in a group that I am in there. And I get out there, and the whole time I'm going out there to look at this pig, I'm thinking I had no desire for a third one, and now all of a sudden I have to have it. And I get out there, and the first thing that happens when I get out there is the Bigfoots that are out in the woods behind her house, because she lives deep in the woods, are mind speaking to me. I didn't want another pig. It was a matter of they wanted her to be aware that they were there. So now I'm sitting there and thinking, how do I tell this woman that's virtually a stranger you know, hi, yeah, I still want this pig, but I'm only here because now I need to tell you that you have Bigfoot. And fortunately for me, she is just an incredible person, her and her husband both. And I went ahead and I started to tell her. My husband's looking at me in shock because I don't normally do that. And I said, you know, listen, I know this sounds crazy, but they're not going to leave me alone until I tell you. And as I explain this stuff to her, now that you can see that the wheels turning in her head, and she's like, well, you know what? This has been going on here, and this has been going on here, and we didn't know why. And I said, well, that's because, you know, these are little things that they're doing, whether it's things being left on the porch, vegetables removed from the garden, you know, gates being opened up out with the animals because she had quite a bit of livestock, just little tiny things. And so I ended up, instead of spending that time looking at these mini pigs, taking her out into the woods behind her house, showing her the stick structure, showing her the footprints, showing her all the signs that were there that they never knew because we're not programmed to believe they exist. So when you do see them, your mind just completely turns a blind eye to it. Now she's got a very nice relationship with the clan around her. They absolutely love them. She's even gotten a couple of pictures of them over there. But, I mean, that was the whole intent. You know, I mean, I did get the mini pig as well, and I absolutely adore him. But that was the whole purpose. I don't even necessarily know that it necessarily was me that wanted to get out there as much as they wanted to be known they were there. And they do it in some very bizarre ways. And it is very hard, and I understand that it's difficult for people to accept it and believe it. It seems to be one of those things that you can tell somebody 1,000 times, but until they experience it, it's, you know, you may get them to believe you 50% of the time or 70%. Once they experience something like that with them, they're firm believers for life.
Very true. That's pretty interesting how you were drawn out there to get this, you know, the pig, but it was totally different.
Oh, absolutely. I was just shocked. I was like, okay, I get it. I may be slow, but I got it.
That's awesome. I'd say, well, it's like me and Dr. John have talked about before that everything happens for a reason, that, like, if you lose your car keys or there's around this going on than what we imagine in our little life, you know?
Yeah.
The whole universe
absolutely
is turning. And there's, you know, every little action, you know, there's a reaction, but we are set in this mode that, you know, our minds don't open up to everything else around us. And we just think, you know, our life, okay, we got to do this, got to do that. And then these little problems or something like that, it's usually because something else is going on. And we don't quite realize it.
I agree.
Pretty interesting. And so now, where you live at now, you said that you have like a clan, or could you tell us about, you know, like the ones around you currently?
Yeah. When I was in Michigan, there were different clans in different areas that I was at. Since I've moved here, it hasn't slowed down activity-wise. I think there's a couple of different clans that come in through here. And we were here just a few days when we really started noticing things immediately. The day we came out and looked at the house, I just took pictures, you know, of the property and that. And, you know, we had noticed a few things in that. And then we were out here. We moved in on a Wednesday, and it was a Thursday that I had the cable guy come out. And, you know, you can feel them. Once you're used to being around them, you can feel when they're out there and they're watching you. And you get that sixth sense like you're being stared at. And a lot of people, no matter if they believe in the paranormal aspect or the flesh and blood, will get that even when they're out in the woods. They can just feel somebody's watching them.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy came out to put the cable in, and he was outside, and he was taking forever. And it got dark. And he was out there for about a half hour, and he came in the house, and he just looked like he was in a panic. And I said, what's the matter? And he said, ma'am, I can't do this. And I said, you can't do what? I can't fix this. I can't do this. And I said, well, what's the matter? He said, there is something out there in those bushes, and I don't know what it is, but it's huge, and it's making all kinds of noises. And, ma'am, I'm not even from the country. I'm from the city in New Jersey. He said, I don't want to be here. And I said, well, what's going on? Like, is somebody bothering you? You know, and I can't tell him. I'm sorry. There's probably Bigfoots out there harassing you because you're too close to the house. So, and I said to him, I said, well, are you that uncomfortable? He said, there's something out there. It's stomping on the ground. It's breaking branches. It sounds like it's growling. And he said, I don't know what it is. I can't see it. I just know it's in the bushes. He says, I got to get out of here. And he literally left. He walked off the job and left. And he said he would be out in the morning when it was daylight. He wasn't about to come out in the, at night. So the next day, another gentleman came to finish hooking up my cable. And I said, well, where's the other guy? And he said, we can't get him back out here. He literally will not come back out here. And he had said when he was out there, he said he wasn't sure if he had the right wires. And he left for like 20 minutes. He came back and said he got the wires. But there was a big deal over he hadn't brought these wires. So the next morning, and he took off, left the job unfinished. The next morning, my husband goes to work. He opens the door, and here's this wad of mangled wires. And they weren't even for cable. I don't know where they came from or where they had gotten them, but left on my doorstep, pushed up against the door. You know, I mean, the Bigfoots leave them up there. They leave stuff all the time. But here was this wire. So apparently they felt bad about running the guy off, and they figured if it was wires that needed done, then they'd give us wires. So we ended up with this big mass of wires.
It never hurts to get help from anywhere, does it?
Oh, it's terrible. When I was in Michigan, my furnace went out in the night one night, and it was wintertime. And I never forgot this. I was home, and my three children were home. And I called for somebody to come out, and it was 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. And I knew, you know, that particular house I lived in, we had an absorbent amount of Bigfoots around. It was just very common. And, you know, they were out walking around all night long. I mean, they'd knock on the windows, they'd knock on the house, everything. And the kids are like, Mom, you're going to have somebody come out here at night? That's not a very good idea. And I said, well, we've got to have heat. So this gentleman pulled up, and he got out. And, of course, the Bigfoots are mind-speaking, and they're enraged. Somebody's out there at night by me, and the kids and I are alone. And so I told the kids, I said, you're going to keep this guy talking in here while he's fixing the furnace. I got to get out in the woods, because if I don't get out there and let him know he's supposed to be here, we could have an issue. And the guy said when he got out of the car, he thought somebody threw a rock at him. And I said, oh, Lord. So the kids, I got the guy fixing the furnace, and the kids were sitting there talking to him, and I went out the front door. I'm out there standing in the tree line going, you guys, you have to let him stay. Like, we don't have fur. We're going to freeze. You know, I just need this guy to fix the furnace. And I was out there the whole time he was working on it. And they were pacing in the tree line. And they're very protective, and they were pacing back and forth. So he finally got the furnace fixed, and he left. And when he left, they were just pelting rocks at the back of the truck when he was going out the driveway. And he never did come back to fix my furnace again. I called him to come out and clean it one time, and he said he couldn't do it. So I don't know if that was why.
Now, did they get the feeling that he was dangerous, or why did they do this to certain people?
I think it was just he was a stranger. I had friends come out to the house that they never bothered at all. You know, there wasn't a problem, but it was somebody new. It was the middle of the night. And I don't know if maybe they did pick up something on him. I don't know. I didn't. I was just relieved to have heat. You know, I didn't think of it either way. But, yeah, I mean, there's definitely been a few people that, you know, they just are uneasy about. When I was married to my ex-husband, who was not a very nice person, and I can remember them telling me that if he ever tried to hurt me to run to the woods, that they would take care of it, run to the woods. And I thought, oh, God, no. That'd be the last thing I'd do after that warning. But, yeah, I mean, most of the time, I've had friends of mine go out in the woods with me. I had a very dear friend of mine was at my house during the day, and we looked outside, and there was a very large female that we used to call Sadie, and she had her baby with her. And she literally brought it right behind the house so that we could see her. I went out. My friend went out. You know, I've seen the Bigfoots for my entire life, and it's not just myself. I've had other people with me. You know, if they only would show themselves and I was alone, I would say, okay, well, maybe everybody's right and I'm in a nut job. But that's never been the case. And if the problem is, you know, maybe people think I'm less than stable because of the Bigfoots, why am I fine the rest of my life? All the portions of my life are perfectly normal. But I have had other people with me that have seen them. And like I said, my friend and I, she went outside with me, and she stayed stationed right in the middle of the backyard. I got much closer to the baby than she did. But we were out there with her for 15 minutes before she picked up the baby and left. You know, it was a very wonderful experience. I mean, she was very calm with the baby. She allowed us to see it. You know, it wasn't very big. It wasn't very old. And, you know, my friend was right there, saw the whole thing. You know, my kids, when they were living out of state, would come into state. They'd go outside and, you know, they would either see them or, you know, they'd find handprints on their car. I had two of my grandchildren, their mother and father were in the military, and they were going to be gone for 5 months. And so the kids came and stayed with me. And my five-year-old granddaughter would be outside, and we had the whole yard was a lot of sand, and she would be out there playing in the sand. And it was when Elvin and the Chipmunks first came out, the movie. And so she didn't know anything about a Bigfoot. And she was out there, and they would roll rocks. They wouldn't throw them at her. They would roll them. And they'd roll over by her, and she'd roll them back. And she was outside, and I saw her staring into the woods. And I saw these little rocks rolling out, and I thought, well, I better get out there. And she was so excited. They would roll them, she'd roll them back, and she came running in the house, and she said, Grandma, you've got Elvin and the Chipmunks living in your woods, but yours are really big. They're a lot bigger than they have in the movies. And she just thought that was the coolest thing. To this day, she feels a very strong connection to the Bigfoots.
They say animals can feel whether somebody is good or not.
I agree.
And so you bring some of these people around, we don't know what everybody's done in their past or what type of person these people are. So a lot of that could be, you know, they could be trying to protect you, trying to warn you. When these people come out to work on your house or something like that, they know that this person has probably done something or has got a bad intention in their heart. And
I agree. I mean, you have to remember, everybody has their own opinion formed, and I respect that 100%. But these really are a type of people. They are. I mean, they do have human in their DNA, regardless of who wants to accept that or not. You know, DNA doesn't lie, especially when you have over 100 samples of it. And they are part human. And people that are really spend a lot of time around them, you will notice that they really behave as a people. They have a different culture. They have a different way of life, but they still are a people. They have language. You know, and they're good at something. They know a person inside and out before we even think to.
Well, could you describe the physical appearance of the ones that you've encountered?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing, you know, that people that have been around them a lot will say as well is they're all individually different. They're just as different as you and I are. I've had some rather large ones that have had the conial shaped head, but I've seen just as many that have had a head shaped like we do. You know, I've had the pronounced brow ridge. Now Shadow, he didn't have the big brow ridge like that. He literally, his head and face were shaped exactly like ours. He just looked like a man that was 6 or 7 foot tall, only he was completely covered with hair. His hair was not any longer than an inch. And he didn't have, like a lot of people would describe, and I've been around him as well, that have the bare face. He did not. He had hair, his entire face. He even looked like he had hair in his eyelids. There was no part of him that was hairless. Most of them do have, you know, a skin on their face rather than hair. You know, they might have it like the beards or whatever, but I mean, they have some portion of their face that's skinless. In Shadow's situation, he did not. You know, I mean, the female, now when Sadie brought that baby into the backyard, she was extremely massive. And, you know, a very dear friend of mine who runs Michigan Bigfoot, his name is Bob Daigle, just adore this man. He had told me, next time you see him, he said, you know, obviously you can't measure how tall they are. He said, look around them, you know, mentally marker how high up they are on that tree or how wide or whatever. And I did that with her, and she was 9.5 feet tall and 5.5 feet wide. and just massive. Like, she would walk. She had very, very long hair, all reddish hair, and it was very long. She would walk, and the hair would separate on the muscles as the muscles would flex. You know, they're just all drastically different. They come in an assortment of colors. They're not, you know, everybody says it's either brown or black. They're not. They're just a huge array of colors. I had one, Shadow was all white, but he had one strip of black that was on his arm. You know, it wasn't very big, but it was there. And your facial features are going to gravitate from the very flat nose to maybe not quite as flat. You know, I mean, like I said, the very pronounced brow ridge to none at all. I mean, they're very individualized.
Now, have you had any that the facial features kind of protrude out? Kind of, you hear some of these people that call dog man stuff like that. But have you seen any where not quite as bad as that? But I've heard of different like type of Bigfoot where their face will protrude out some kind of almost out.
Yeah,
quite as
I actually have a picture of one. Yeah. Yeah, her name was Trudy, and, you know, I knew she was there. I used to mind speak with her, and I actually got a picture of her one day. She was standing across the field next to my house by a big pine tree, and I just refer them to, like, the dog face because they don't have that. The dog man, which, you know, I've gotten pictures of them as well, but they have the very pronounced, longer nose. She looks, I mean, and this is just my opinion. It's now what they are. The dog face ones look like they actually are a cross between a Bigfoot and a dogman. You know, they don't look completely like a dogman, and they don't look completely like a Bigfoot. But yeah, they do have that more pronounced nose. I mean, it's more like it's not even really a snout, but it just does protrude more.
Oh, wow. So you said you got a picture of her? Is there any way that you could share that with me or show it to me? Or?
Yeah, just like I said, get with me and let me know where to send it. I'll be glad to. Not a problem.
Okay.
You know, I have a picture of a young dogman that when we moved here, I was inside and it was getting, you know, it was still light out, but it was later in the day and he kept telling me to come outside. And I said, no, you know, I'll go out there. You'll take off. I'm not going to see you. Been there, done that. Well, I'll even let you take my picture. And I said, now I know you're lying because you know, guys don't like your pictures taken. And he just was very persistent. And this went on for a couple hours. And I said, fine, I will go out. I'm going to take a bunch of pictures, and if you don't show up in it, don't talk to me anymore. And, you know, if you focus a camera lens on any of these things, you just don't – you get everything blurry. And it's hard to get a picture anyway, but I noticed that if I take pictures, like scenery pictures, stand in a circle and just go around and then blow it up, if they're out there, and that's if they are, generally you'll find it in there that way. That doesn't mean you're going to find them every time you take a picture, but, you know, you have a better chance. So I went outside, and I didn't know where he was. He just kept saying, I'm up here. And I'm like, okay. And I'm in a tree. Well, I live in the woods. There's a million trees. So I just did some random pictures, and I really and truly never expected to get anything. And here he was, way up about 20 feet up in a tree. I mean, dog face, you know, the pointy ears, the whole thing. But
wow.
I'll send you that picture as well.
Okay. Are you going to be at the Georgia Bigfoot Conference?
I am. I think I'm going to. I know I'm going to be down there on Friday. I'm going to be bringing Igor is the
okay.
plan as of right now. And I know he's speaking on Saturday, so I'm going to try also to be down there on Saturday with him.
Okay. Because of course, you know, I'm helping host the conference, and I'll be speaking there.
Yeah, it'd be good to see you. Yeah, Igor's supposed to be coming. If all things go as we have them tentatively planned right now, he'll be staying here. He generally, when he comes in the state, he travels and he does different, you know, investigations everywhere, and he does the conferences. But he generally makes sure that he stops at my place. He's been coming to my place since, I want to say, maybe 2011 or 12, probably 12. And spends a lot of time. He's interacts with them when he's here. They like to tease him.
Well, see, I remember him and his Carter farm. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Oh yes. Yeah. In fact, I'm a friend of Janice's, so and you know, Janice and I, Igor's wanted us to meet for years and it just never really worked out. I had not met her or had contact with her, and when he came to visit me last year, he had gone by her house. And so she brought him to my house in South Carolina. And so I finally did get to meet her. And we get along very well. She's just a sweetheart.
See, I've been wanting to get a hold of her. I've read a lot. I'm actually friends with someone that was real close to Mary Green that was, you know, that had interviewed her and all that. And I've always, you know, I wanted to hear more about Janice's farm there. I know where it's at there and outside of Sweetwater, Tennessee. But,
we have a lot of fun when we get together. She's come and stayed a couple of times at my house since Igor's gone back. We have an awful lot of fun. We really do. And we generally, when we're together, you see nothing but eyes shine in the woods on all sides. it gets fun.
Now,
they're climbing on the roof.
Is she in Indiana? Somebody had told me that she was in Indiana.
No, uh-uh.
Okay. Okay. So she's still around this area then in the south there.
Yeah.
Could definitely like to meet her and talk to you, of course, definitely. I think you're going to be there at Georgia Conference.
I want to jump in here and say, Robin, we've also got the South Carolina Lizardman Festival that is the weekend of June 1st, and that's in the Bishopville area, which is probably not more than an hour from you. Now, Matt will be down there.
Yeah.
I'm running it, and let's talk because I think it would be fun if you could come see us there at the Lizardman Festival.
I'd like to. We've had a couple sightings out this way, so, yeah, it would be kind of fun.
Yeah, I might be presenting some surprise information about Lizardman that I haven't even told Matt yet about. But we'll talk about that. It's that weekend. Now, it's kind of a country fun family festival that also includes Lizardman and an appropriate dose of Bigfoot and a few UFOs. So, I mean, you know, what else can we – I mean, how much more fun can you have, right?
Exactly. And you know what? The people that really end up having a lot of contact with the Bigfoot, you know, and most of them will talk about it, but the large majority of it, all that stuff piles in, and they all seem to hang around each other. So if you get one, you're going to get all of it. I know we have gotten some of the craziest pictures of things over here. I mean, cat people and looks like little ET things walking in the woods. And, oh, my goodness. I mean, and I get pictures of them. Even like
well, now be careful about the little ETs because you may very well be talking about what are known as the Cherokee little people. I've been doing some research on that, and in fact, this Wednesday night, I'm going to be on Jen Cruz's show, The Journey, talking a little bit about that. So that's something that's kind of coming. They're kind of pushing their way in into our lives here in the last year or so, a lot harder than they really were. So that's something.
I'd be interested in that because I've got two pictures. One has like the bulbous ET head on it, but the other one just looks like a little tiny person, literally a little tiny man is what it looks like. It doesn't look
that's correct.
Like an alien at all.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
It bare chested and he was just standing out between the trees. I just happened to be taking a picture, you know, every now and then I will go out and just take a random picture and just to see what I get. And 9 out of 10 times I get absolutely nothing, but every now and then something pops up and he was just standing there. You know, like I said, I do have one with more of the bulb type head, but yeah, that one had always perplexed me because it really didn't look like, you know, what you would think an ET would look like, although, you know, there's 1,000 different kinds, but so I'd be interested
billions
to learn
of people,
about that.
So yeah, but yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be talking about that. Actually a couple times. First of all, in about 2 weeks up in Georgia at the Rebbin County Public Library. Then, of course, I'll be talking about it some at Georgia Bigfoot Conference and about Lizardman. So I think we'll have an enjoyable dialogue and everything. And I wanted to stick something else in, another comment that I have. I guess instinctively, I can tell when someone is telling me a story that is real and unusual and nobody could have made up. I guess that's one little talent that I have. And I'd say I believed you 99.5% until this show today. But when you mentioned the story about Alvin and the Chipmunks and your granddaughter, none of us are smart enough to make that story up. We're not. That's a true story. And that is, I think,
that's the coolest.
I just want you to know that is the coolest Bigfoot story I've ever heard.
Thank you.
I mean,
thank you. Well, you know,
notwithstanding, I mean, you know, listen, Matt, I'm going to ask you, Robin, I'm going to ask you, haven't you guys heard false stories before? I know I have.
Oh, absolutely. I can tell them within the first 2 seconds after they're talking. I mean, I absolutely. And, you know, the people, I spoke at the international conference in Siberia on the Bigfoots. I was invited there. Igor Borsov invited me when I first had met him. And I came back from there, and I went into it rather stupidly. I was so excited about going. I never thought about the press. Nobody mentioned to me anything about press to begin with. And it was just, the footage was everywhere. And as I came back from there and I went through customs, I was pulled over by a customs agent. And I thought, my God, what did I do? And he said, we saw you on TV. And I said, what are you talking about? You know? And when I got there, and there were people and cameras in my face the entire time I was there, they were all lovely. They were very well-mannered, very nice people. I didn't realize whatever was filmed there would be put here. And he said that he had seen me on the news. Well, after I came back, and it was on every major network, it was just unbelievable. And I had very mixed, you know, responses. One, half the people thought I was nuts. The other people thought it was wonderful that I, you know, that this was going on. And my thing was, I can take a lie detector test. I have no issue with that. I mean, I don't care. And then I turned that around and I said, if people don't believe me, I'm okay with that because I know my truth. I live it. This is my life 24 hours a day. And it turned into being my kid's life. Like my granddaughter, she comes to my home and the first thing she says is, Grandma, I want to see the Bigfoots. And I'm like, well, honey, I can't make them come out. If they come out, they do. If they don't, they don't. And she's seen little clips of them as they're walking in and out, you know, and she sees signs of them. And we pulled in the driveway one day and there was a dogman that was standing right across the driveway. And as we pulled in the driveway, we'd gone into town to get toys or something. She just turned 13. She was 12 at the time. And we turned in the driveway, and she said, Grandma, did you see that? It looked like a giant dog standing there. And I said, that's fine. You know, he just stand and guard on everything, not a big deal. But these kids grew up with this. I mean, it was nothing for my kids to see them walking around, each one of them, my younger three, my older five, not as much. But the younger three especially, there's not one of them that did not have those encounters, you know. And I would bring other – I didn't bring a lot of people to my house. Because that, I mean, I paid the taxes on it, but it was really their house. I mean, the Foots own the land. And so I was very cautious with who I let come to my house. I did let a few researchers out, but I knew that they were researchers of integrity and would do whatever needed to be done to make sure they weren't harmed. So I was very cautious of it. But other people saw them as well, you know. And the kids, they would put their hands in my kids' windows. You know, if they had stuff on the windowsill and they'd take the stuff off the windowsill. My boys are laying in their bedroom watching TV one night and they shared a room. They come running out of there. And we had only been in the house 2 weeks. And they're like, Mom, there's these giant beings standing, or not being called beings, to people. There's these giant people with hair that are sitting out in the backyard looking in the room. And I don't know necessarily if they watch TV, but I think the colors and the movement, you know, would get them excited, and they would sit out there and look in the house. I mean, this was normal for my kids. My daughter was forever, Mom, I need really thick curtains. And I said, why? Because every time I look out my window, there's a face looking back in, you know, and they were careful with what friends they brought over. They only brought friends over that they knew they weren't going to get teased because, you know, their friends were guaranteed to see them, especially if they were there overnight. You know, I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah, I want to interject a story that I have It's in the book that Matt and I did, Lizard Men and Friends. It's about a buddy of mine who, into high school, he was over at his buddy's house. They were drunk. They were passed out. And he saw a lizard man attempt to enter the garage and try to break a chain, which lizard man apparently was not able to do. And the next morning, you know, when he asked them about it, they said, yeah, he's there a lot. And that's why we have the chain, so he can't get to the car. And he has
well, they'll get in it.
And he, well, I mean, I guess they will or they won't, depending on what they really want to happen. But I just, I think it's interesting that many of the, we'll call them entities, you know, no better word to describe them. Many of the entities, I think they don't want to try to cause any harm. They want to be a little playful or a little weird. They're just like people.
Oh, I agree.
And you talk about, you know, your kids, they knew not to bring many people. Did they bring one or did they have one or two special friends that they did bring over?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And they all had witnessed, you know, different things happening with them, you know, so they knew which friends were not going to run to town and tell everybody things and laugh at them because they do. And I always was very careful. Or I tried to be careful with that because, you know, this is my choice to be a part of it. I mean, the Bigfoots are going to be around me no matter what I want to do, which I feel blessed that they are. But what I do with it is my choice. So I try not to interject that into my kids' lives any more than I have to. But again, they were young. They were living at home. And they're going to go where I'm at. So the kids, you know, they had to. They had my two of my boys. They like to bow hunt. And during the course of bow hunting season, I'd wake up and there would be this stack of arrows, used arrows that had been taken out of the woods and put on my front porch. And I always suspected, you know, it was probably the foots. I mean, who else was going to do it? But the kids were outside. They wanted to practice. And I said, okay, that's fine, but you're not shooting towards the woods. You can go parallel to the woods and do target practice. I'm fine. Do not shoot into the woods because you're going to scare them. You know, they have their families out there, and they're going to think you're being threatening to them. So just go shoot your bow and practice, but do it parallel. So they were outside. I was in the house, and they were laughing, and the kids were having a good time. And during the course of playing around, one of the arrows went sideways. Instead of going straight, it shot off to the side, and it went into the woods. So my one son went to go retrieve it, and it was probably 10 feet had gone into the woods. He went to get it. Right as he bent down to pick it up, here comes a log that was probably about 12 inches long, about 4 inches around, and comes curling at him. And he came running in the house, and he said, Mom, Mom, you go out there and talk to the Bigfoots. He said, they just threw a log at me. And I looked at him, and I said, you shot it into the woods, didn't you? And he got quiet. I said, you shot that arrow into the woods. I told you if you shot it into the woods, they were going to think that, you know, you were trying to hurt them. And he said, well, I wasn't trying to. I was trying to make it go straight, but it went in the woods. They had been out there for an hour shooting it, no problem. The Bigfoots didn't bother him at all. But that one arrow went in the woods. He went to go pick up that arrow, and here comes the log right over his head. And I said, if they want to hit you, they hit you. They don't miss. I said, that was your warning shot. Be thankful that it didn't hit you. They were very careful after that. Another arrow never went into the woods.
Well, good.
Well, that's not like my experience. That stick come flying at me. I knew it didn't want me there.
I've been lucky. I haven't had things thrown at me. The only thing that ever happened when we first moved to one of the residents in Michigan, and this is where we had such a huge amount that was just literally walking all around. My brother-in-law at the time had gone out on the property, and we didn't know it. We weren't home. He went out there to go deer hunting and didn't say anything. We had like 10 acres. We pulled in the driveway. He came running out of the woods, and he said, why didn't you tell me that you had somebody in a white gorilla suit walking around in the woods? He said, you scared me to death. And I'm like, yeah, because we're so wealthy. We hire people to walk around in gorilla suits in the woods when we're not home. So we went out there. I mean, of all the stupid things, he was just, yeah, He's like, why didn't you tell me you had somebody out there in a white gorilla suit? And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, that's what we do with our time. So we go out there, and we'd only been living there 3 days. And we walked out there, and I had the kids where I could see them, because, of course, they wanted to go out there. I made them go in front of me so I could keep an eye on them. And we're walking around to see what was going on. And very, very lightly, I was getting little acorns. And they would, you know, just toss them ever so slightly onto me. And I would feel them on my shoulder or on my back or on my hair or whatever. But it was just very gentle. It was the lightest tap ever. And I would look back and I'd see an acorn rolling on the ground. But I've been really fortunate. I mean, and I've had to come up against, you know, not really against, but I've had to deal with some aggressive ones in Texas and in Pennsylvania. And the one in Texas, he actually bluff charged me. But I've never had things thrown at me. And the only reason that one bluff charged me was because it wanted me to leave. It refused to. There were some children involved, and I wanted to make sure we got the kids out of there first. And then I left. But I've never had them throw anything at me. I've never been zapped, knock on wood. They've never done anything to me. You know, I've been very fortunate. I know a lot of people that they have. And I've been right near people that have gotten zapped, and they've put them on the ground. I, per se, have not had that as of yet. That doesn't mean it won't happen, but as of yet, it hasn't.
So what do you think that zap is? I've heard of it before. I've had somebody tell me that they've, you know, been zapped. What do you think that is? What?
My opinion, for what that's worth, is it's just a huge shot of direct energy. The people that I've been around, and I've literally had somebody standing next to me get hit with it and not myself. I mean, it's very personalized. If they want it to hit you and nobody else, that's where it's going. But it can do an extreme amount of damage. I mean, it could stop your heart if they wanted to. I know witnesses that have had that happen where they've lost bladder control. I've been next to somebody that it happened, that it created such an extreme sharp pain in their head, like a headache, that it put her on the ground and she literally could not get up. I've had another person that had that done where he felt a tightness in his chest, pain all over his body. I mean, the witnesses that I've talked to and the people that I've been around when that's happened, it's been excruciating. It can be excruciating. Like I said, I don't know why it hasn't happened on me. I'm thankful that it hasn't. The one person, I was at a conference in Michigan speaking, and we had a group of us had gone out in the woods, and the person that I was standing next to, they did that to him, but yet they mind spoke with me and told me that I could come forward, and I was allowed to go in the woods with them. Now, why they did that with him, I don't know. He was a very caring, loving person. I don't know.
Now, have you heard of them, like, leaving marks, like burn marks on the person or loss of time or anything like that whenever they've been zapped?
I've heard that different people, not so much that they, and this is just my own experience, that they've left marks. Red marks, yeah. You know, like if somebody were to squeeze you or slap you or something, you know, leave like a red mark or a hive. I've heard of that. I haven't heard so much of scratches. I know of people that, you know, they've gone up and touched or whatever, like they'll come up behind them and they won't even know that they're there, they're cloaked or whatever, and they've left scratches on them or things like that, but it hasn't been during being zapped that it's happened.
Because I've heard of a case where a man was zapped and he had lost time too.
I've heard of that. But, you know, I've heard of people that have lost time during being zapped. I've had them do that with me where I've lost time, but there was no discomfort. There was no zapping. It was very, you know, pleasant. I mean, it wasn't a bad situation. They had asked me, I was driving down the road one day, and basically it was mind speak telling me I needed to stop. They wanted me to come in the woods. And I said, okay, what do you need? And it was, we want to talk with you. And I said, okay. So I stopped the car. My husband was with me. We started to walk into the woods, and he can mind speak with them fluently. He's really amazing at it. And they told him he needed to wait. So he waited. I moved forward. And I saw, you know, little faces from him. I mean, I could see him in the distance in the woods, or, you know, where it looked like there were several back there, and I walked into this one area where they wanted me to go to, and it looked different to me when I stood in this one area. And so I called my husband, and they gave him permission to come, and he came up, and he didn't see what I saw, which was okay. But we were standing there, and we turned around to leave, and we both heard giggling, you know, and we got back to the car, and what should have been gone maybe 5 to 10 minutes, looking at the clock in the car, we were gone almost 45 minutes to an hour. But there was no zapping involved. It wasn't an unpleasant experience. We both felt like when we were out there with them, it was a very loving situation. I mean, they almost will make you feel like they're giving you a big hug. You know, really, it's very warming. But we got in the car and we were missing time. And I've had several instances of missing time, whether it be through an ET situation or the foots or whatever. But I've never had anything unpleasant happen during that time as far as with them. You know, it didn't come in a form of being zapped at all.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean,
I've actually just begun hearing stories of the zapping, and kind of curious.
But my understanding is it can be really severe. I mean, like I said, I've watched them put people on the ground, and they can't get up. A very close friend of mine, she would go out with me in the woods all the time because I wanted somebody that could back up what I was saying. I mean, I had pictures, you know, and all these experiences were going on. And I said, listen, you know what? I know I'm not crazy. I don't care what anybody else says. I know I'm not. I want you to go with me. I want you to be able to back up what is going on. And so she would go out, I would say, you know, out of 7 days, and I was out there every day, out of 7 days, she would go out with me 3 to 4. And we had been in this one area, and there was a couple of females that had babies. And I knew that they had had them. And they had asked us to come down to this one area, and there was this huge group of bushes. I mean, they were tall scrub bushes. It was quite round. I mean, it was maybe 20 foot around. And I kept getting the feeling that that's where they were at. They were inside those bushes. And so we walked down that way, and they kept telling me to come there. So we did, and apparently it was all right for me, but it wasn't for her. And she got about 25 feet from this bush, and she grabbed her head in agony, and she dropped right to the ground. And I was walking, and I heard her fall, and I turned around. I said, what's wrong with you? And she said, what are they doing? She said, my head, it feels like it's going to explode. Make them stop. And so I turned around, and I didn't see them standing there. I knew they were there. I could feel them. And I'm like, you have to stop this. Like, you have to. This is crazy. You know, she's not doing anything. And it lasted a couple of minutes, and she was miserable. She could not move. She was, like, paralyzed and on the ground in tears. And they finally stopped, and she got up. And as long as she didn't step any closer to that bush, they didn't do it. But if she tried to step closer to that bush, they'd hit her again. But yet they allowed me to walk right up to the bush. I don't understand. I mean, I don't know the mindset or the rhyme or reason on it. You know, and if she was a kind person, she certainly would never have done anything. And they had let her see her before. Sadie, let her see your baby. You know, it was just that particular individual. They're all individuals. They're all their mind process and thinking and everything is individualized. And it was just the ones that were there.
What about diet and stuff like that? What do you have to diet?
What?
Have you seen them eat and stuff like that? Like, I believe that they eat a lot of horse berries and stuff like that, and I don't think they eat, like a lot of.
Yeah, they eat pretty much everything. I mean, I know, you know, they eat meat, they eat vegetables, you know, plants. They have a terrible sweet tooth, but the problem is there's no dentist out there, so you have to be really careful. I know of a lot of people that will put sweets out for them. You know, I always tell people, please be careful, because I do know of certain ones that have had tooth infections. You know, there's been certain ones that have passed away from tooth infections. But, yeah, they'll eat pretty much anything. You know, their diet is pretty wide. You know, obviously they eat meat. You know, their main sources is deer, rabbits, depending on location, elk, whatever. They definitely want their meat, but they have no problem with the vegetables and the plants. You know, they use the plants for medicinal purposes as well.
Now, I have found deer before that had been snapped back from their neck to back legs. They grab them from the neck, and the back leg may
exactly.
be backward.
Yeah.
Snap. Now,
yeah.
I've seen also where they only take, like, possibly the liver, or do you know of any certain part that they particularly like, that they love, or?
They do. They love the liver. They like the heart. They will use all of the meat, but I think that's the high point for them. I know when I was previously married, not to my husband right now, but before, he was a very big hunter. And every year he would go out and put the bait piles out and stuff for the deer. And we would go out to the bait piles and you would see this big glob of white deer hair where the deer would come in. They know how to use the people's bait piles. They watch them come into our bait piles and then they'll grab the deer while they're at the bait pile. And there would just be all this belly hair where they would just right there just rip off the hair and they'd go in for the liver and that. But like if he would gut a deer and bury the insides or whatever, you're guaranteed it was gone the next day. They'd dig it up and they'd take it. Now, I went to a research area in Imlay City in Michigan, and they had this one part that had caves that was on county land. And one of the park rangers there had stated that he went into one of these caves right before winter and found 14 deer all stacked in a pile in these caves. Each one had the liver and the heart and the guts and everything removed out of them. But they were all stacked in this cave, and they found a lot of the footprints and stuff around them as well. So, I mean, that's definitely a main food source for them.
I think they get a lot from the organs, a lot of what they need from the organs and stuff. Burn stuff.
I don't necessarily, in this part, I don't know. I don't necessarily know that they will do, like, the liver and that on, like, the small game. They were forever getting rabbits and things at our place, and one of my boys had walked out back, and he said he walked around the corner of the woods, and he said there was this rabbit there with the head ripped off of it, and the body was still warm. And he heard something in the brush, so he came and he got me, and he said, "Mom, come back with me, come back with me." So I walked back there, and by then they'd already taken the rabbit. They were gone. And they used to bring up, they would get rabbits and take the heads off of them, and they'd leave rabbits without heads on them on my porch for me. And I would ask them, why were you doing this? Well, at the time, I was putting food out for them. And again, I don't recommend it. I really don't, because if you come in with a clan, and you're never going to be able to feed them enough to keep them alive anyway. But some of these plants are very primitive, and when you stop feeding them, they can get really aggressive. I did not have that experience with my group. I was very lucky. But I would go, and I just put all kinds of stuff out there for them, and they would, they do a barter system. Like if you do a kindness for them, they in turn try to do that back to you as well. So I would go to feed them, and then they were forever bringing me, you know, possums or rabbits without heads or whatever, and leaving them on my porch for me, you know. And I'd say, "Well, you fed us. Now we're feeding you."
Yeah, I've heard a lot of that about the aggression. Once you start feeding them, if you quit, then they will approach your house and everything. If you don't.
I was very lucky, very, very lucky. I mean, but again, when I started doing that, I didn't know any Bigfoot researchers. I spent most of my life by myself with them. I didn't have anybody to look up to or to go to for advice or, you know, why are they doing this or that? It was just me and them because I didn't think anybody would believe me anyway. And so at that point in time, I didn't have anybody around me, and I was just trying to do something nice. I didn't have any aggression problems with them with that. The closest I got, I had what I called the feeding station, and I had all kinds of stuff put out there. I even had, it was a giant rabbit cage with locks on it so that you had to have thumbs in order to unlock this to get in and get the food. So I knew that nothing else was getting it. And they would go and unlock it, and they'd take it. They'd take the plate and everything. It was ridiculous. But anyway, they would be out there, and I had buckets that I hung from trees for them. I took the kids to church one night. And while I was at church, I was supposed to drop them off and come home. I was going to feed the Bigfoots when I got back, and church had asked me to stay and help. Anyway, we didn't get home till 10:30. And the buckets that I had were on snaps that were attached to the trees. And I came home, and here these buckets had been unsnapped, taken off the trees. They were put on my front porch upside down. Like, okay, idiot, you forgot to feed us. We need our food. But, I mean, they never got aggressive. You know, they brought me the buckets and said, you know, they wanted me fed. So the kids went in the house, and they were out there hooting and hollering and screaming and hollering and carrying on. I took their food out, but never was there a sign of aggression. That is not the experience that I hear most, though, from most people. And most people, when they start feeding them and they stop, it can be really destructive to property. You know, they do a lot of damage. I was very fortunate. You know, once in a while, if I have leftovers here, I'll go take it out and put it out, but never on a regular basis where they're counting on it. I stopped doing it after that because by then I was starting to meet people and I was hearing about all these negative things that were happening. And I thought, God, I better stop before anybody gets hurt. But I never had aggression from mine. I was so lucky. The group, I had several researchers that came in and said, you know, the group you've got here is just not like what most people have. I was very fortunate.
Nice. Now, have you ever noticed a smell? Now, my encounters, anytime I was around, there was an odor.
Occasionally, yeah. I think it, again, I hate to sound like a broken record, it comes down to the individual. It really does, because there's some that have really good, you know, body hygiene, others that don't. I've had some that just stunk to heavens. It was awful. But then I've also had some, like, you know, when Shadow came up to me, he's 10 foot from me, there was no odor. You know, there's my three, what I call my three core guys that I have the most contact with. I've never had body odor come off of them whatsoever. We have one that loves the smell of a skunk. I swear he rubs skunk smell all over him, you know. But it just really depends on the individual. Some of them have just got a horrible smell. I've had people that have hunted in the woods that we used to have. I mean, I'm not there now, but that have hunted out there and said that they smelled some that smelled like coffee. And we've had several females, especially when they're pregnant, that will literally smell like flowers.
Oh, wow.
You know, I don't know if they rub it on them or what the deal is. I do know, and there's been several people that have stated this, that the pregnant females tend to smell like flowers. And I don't know if it's just an odor that, you know, with their body chemistry changing, that it emits that or what. I mean, you know, there are females that like the smell of flowers and they rub it all over them. You know, I spoke with one out of state, and she really liked the fact that the person that she liked to watch all the time, you know, she had her own garden and flower shop and everything, and she would go and get flowers from there and rub them all over her. You know, I've seen some that literally look like they have feces caked all over them. You know, but then again, there's others that just don't. So I really... The only thing I can say to that is my own experience has been, it depends on the individual, because we've had a couple of them that have come through and it's just like, my God, you gag. They stink so bad.
Right. Yeah. That's the one that I experienced. It was a bad odor.
Yeah. But, yeah. You know, a lot of them, I get like a dirt smell, but we really haven't had too much of it that has been too awful bad. We did have one that came up in front of our window probably about a month ago, and he was kind of stinky, but it wasn't repulsive. It was just like a not clean smell, you know. But for the most part, it hasn't been too bad.
I wonder if a lot of this got to do with, like, I wonder if they release a pheromone.
Well, I wondered about that too, because I know people have said that they think that it's kind of like a defense thing. That has not been my experience, but I don't rule it out because it's not something that I've had that experience with. You know, I'm generally open to all thoughts on it because I don't know it all. I don't claim to. I mean, I can put what I know on the head of a pin. You know, I think that there's anybody that says they're an expert in this, right then and there, it stops me dead in my tracks and tells me they don't know anything because
exactly.
There aren't any experts. It's all, everybody has different experiences. That's it.
That is true.
That's very interesting.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I was going to say, go ahead with your story, Matt, and then it'll be time for us to walk into the sunset for this episode. But what was the last story you were going to share with us there, please?
I was just going to say, I did a lot of my research off what I'd known for a fact from what I'd experienced. But like you said, every single one is different. So I've noticed now coming through, you know, what I've experienced could be a little bit different from what somebody else has, because it's a different one. It's a different, you know, different area, everything. So I've had to open up my research. You know, I went straight when I first started doing it from my experiences that I known for a fact. And now I've had to open up widely, different areas, different ones, individuals. It's just huge.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's experiences can be discounted. You know, they are as diverse as we are. You know, I don't think there's like one set of rules on any of it. And they're never going to give us all the information on them we want anyway.
Exactly.
So the best we can hope for is take everybody's experiences and, you know, kind of composite it all together.
It's the only way to learn.
But Robin, your granddaughter has the best experience. So
she did. I mean,
with Alvin and the Chipmunks, that's most.
Yep.
That's the most wonderful story.
Footballs and basketballs. You know, and bouncing. My daughter played soccer, and she would throw a soccer ball into the woods. They'd kick it right back. I don't know if they kick it or throw it or whatever. And I had a very dear friend of mine, I didn't know her very well at the time, wanted to gift them something, and she got a hula hoop that had beads in it that would glow when it moved. And you'd see these beads moving around the hula hoop, and I thought, well, I don't know what they're going to do with that, but okay. And so I left it out in the woods, and you would see them dragging and throwing it through the woods at night. You know, but they absolutely would play with the kids. The kids were playing basketball one day, and it bounced off the hoop and it rolled into the woods. Kids went to get it, never found the basketball again. And about a month later, they were walking down the road, and here's their basketball, and they knew it was theirs. They had their name on it. And they literally looked like they had taken it and bit it like you would bite an apple. But they would get the football, too. Yeah, if they were playing football and the football went in the woods, you're guaranteed you weren't getting that football back. And we found it in the middle of the woods, and it literally looked like they put a football in one hand, and like if you would take a pop can and crunch it in one hand, that's what they did to the football. We would put toys out for the kids. My daughter got a little sand bucket, and we put all kinds of toys out and blankets and dowels and stuff out in the woods, and they'd have a ball with them. And like 2 years later, when that How to Train Your Dragon, the first movie came out, McDonald's had the little How to Train Your Dragon toys. And my daughter just thought it was the coolest thing. And she said, Mom, I want them to have it for their kids. I'm getting older. I don't play with it now. I want them to have it for their kids. So she put it out in this bucket. And they took the bucket. They took the toys. I didn't see it for 2 years. And one day we went outside, and here on this rock by the house, they had brought that How to Train Your Dragon toy back for her and put it on the rock. Right by the house.
Oh, that's great. Well, we really appreciate you. We're going to have to, the British lady has said we're about done, but I wanted to thank you so much. And will you come back and talk with us sometime soon?
Oh, absolutely. And thank you so much for having me.
Oh, we are glad to have you. And Matt Delf, I guess will you be back next week with me?
Oh, you know I am.
All right, that's
good. Yeah, Matt, give contact information to John, and I'll send you those pictures.
I'll make sure to. I'll get both of you in contact. Don't worry about that.
Thank you so much, guys.
That'll be good. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks to everybody who has been listening to Bigfoot and Company. This is Dr. John and Matt Delf. Do not forget the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, April 26th, 27th, 28th, Raven County Civic Center in Clayton, Georgia. And we'll be back next week with more exciting interviews on Bigfoot and Company. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye.